Are you ready, Allison?
I am now.
Okay, I'm gonna start it.
Let's do it.
Boop.
Oh, I thought you meant the reading. I was like, I'm not ready.
No. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Chip and Eric read through the Bible with friends. One of our friends is named Allison, and Allison did a cartwheel right before I hit record. That's the name of the podcast today.
Yeah.
Episode one of Chip and Eric and friends read through the Bible. One of our friends is Allison. Allison did a cartwheel right before I hit record. Episode one.
I just ordered the t-shirts. I don't know if they're ready yet. Well, it's because we got behind in ordering stuff because they apparently we slowed down their production by the having to make the tumors.
Okay, Josh Pugh made the term tumors. He doesn't make the
That's
t-shirts.
what they tell me. So
Hey, it's day 100 and two.
and two.
Yeah.
And we're and we're reading
A
1
tahoo.
Samuel 10 through 12 and Mark 6 1 through 32.
So 10 is a 1 and a 0. And 12, I think, is a 1 and a tahoo.
Eric's been practicing his best Winnie the Pooh voice.
No. Well, first of all, that would be Tigger.
Oh, you're right, Tigger.
But I'm doing the owl
The
from the
owl
Tootsie
from the
Pop.
Tootsie Pop. That's right. Similar.
Mr. Owl, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
Let's find out. A one, a two, a three. Samuel anoints Saul as king. Then Samuel took a flask of olive oil and poured it over Saul's head. He kissed Saul and said, "I'm doing this because the Lord has appointed you to be ruler over Israel, his special possession. When you leave me today, you will see two men beside Rachel's tomb at Zelzah on the border of Benjamin. They will tell you that the donkeys have been found and that your father has stopped worrying about them and is now worried about you. He is asking, 'Have you seen my son?' When you get to the Oak of Tabor, you will see three men coming toward you who are on their way to worship God at Bethel. One will be bringing three young goats, another will have three loaves of bread, and the third will be carrying a wineskin full of wine. They will greet you and offer you two of the loaves, which you are to accept. When you arrive at Gibeah of God, where the garrison of the Philistines is located, you will meet a band of prophets coming down from the place of worship. They will be playing a harp, a tambourine, a flute, and a lyre, and they will be prophesying. At that time, the Spirit of the Lord will come powerfully upon you, and you will prophesy with them. You will be changed into a different person. After these signs take place, do what must be done, for God is with you. Then go down to Gilgal ahead of me. I will join you there to sacrifice burnt offerings and peace offerings. You must wait for 7 days until I arrive and give you further instructions."
Samuel's signs are fulfilled. As Saul turned and started to leave, God gave him a new heart, and all Samuel's signs were fulfilled that day. When Saul and his servant arrived at Gibeah, they saw a group of prophets coming toward them. Then the Spirit of God came powerfully upon Saul, and he too began to prophesy. When those who knew Saul heard about it, they exclaimed, "What? Is even Saul a prophet? How did the son of Kish become a prophet?" And one of those standing there said, "Can anyone become a prophet no matter who his father is?" So that is the origin of the saying, "Is even Saul a prophet?" When Saul had finished prophesying, he went up to the place of worship. "Where have you been?" Saul's uncle asked him and his servant. "We were looking for the donkeys," Saul replied, "but we couldn't find them. So we went to Samuel and asked him where they were." "Oh, and what did he say?" his uncle asked. "He told us that the donkeys had already been found," Saul replied. "But Saul didn't tell us about, didn't tell about, okay.
You got
But
this.
Saul didn't tell his uncle what Samuel said about the kingdom."
Saul is acclaimed king. Later, Samuel and all the people of Israel met before the Lord at Mizpah. He said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, has declared. I brought you from Egypt and rescued you from the Egyptians and from all of the nations that were oppressing you. But though I have rescued you from your misery and distress, you have rejected your God today and have said, 'No, we want a king instead.' Now, therefore, present yourselves before the Lord by tribes and clans." So Samuel brought all the tribes of Israel before the Lord, and the tribe of Benjamin was chosen by lot. Then he brought each family of the tribe of Benjamin before the Lord, and the family of the Matrites was chosen. And finally, Saul, son of Kish, was chosen from among them. But when they looked for him, he had disappeared. So they asked the Lord, "Where is he?" And the Lord replied, "He's hiding among the baggage." So they found him and brought him out, and he stood head and shoulders above anyone else. Then Samuel said to all the people, "This is the man the Lord has chosen as your king. No one in all Israel is like him." And all the people shouted, "Long live the king!" And Samuel told the people what the rights and duties of a king were. He wrote them down on a scroll and placed it before the Lord. Then Samuel sent the people home again. When Saul returned to his home at Gibeah, a group of men whose hearts God had touched went with him. But there were some scoundrels who complained, "How can this man save us?" And they scorned him and refused to bring him gifts. But Saul ignored them. Nahash, king of the Ammonites, had been grievously oppressing the people of Gad and Reuben who live in the east of the Jordan River. He gouged out the right eye of the Israelites living there, and he didn't allow anyone to come and rescue them. In fact, of all the Israelites east of the Jordan, there wasn't a single one whose right eye Nahash had not gouged out. But there were 7,000 men who had escaped from the Ammonites, and they had settled in Jabesh-Gilead.
1 Samuel chapter 11, Saul defeats the Ammonites. About a month later, King Nahash of Ammon led his army against the Israelite town of Jabesh-Gilead. But all the citizens of Jabesh asked for peace. "Make a treaty with us, and we will be your servants," they pleaded. "All right," Nahash said, only one condition. "I will gouge out the right eye of every one of you as a disgrace to all Israel." "Give us 7 days to send messengers throughout Israel," replied the elders of Jabesh. "If no one comes to save us, we will agree to your terms." When the messengers came from Gibeah of Saul and told the people about their plight, everyone broke into tears. Saul had been plowing a field with his oxen, and when he returned to the town, he asked, "What's the matter? Why is everyone crying?" So they told him about the message from Jabesh. Then the Spirit of God came powerfully upon Saul, and he became very angry. He took two oxen and cut them into pieces and sent the messengers to carry them throughout Israel with this message: "This is what will happen to the oxen of anyone who refuses to follow Saul and Samuel into battle." And the Lord made the people afraid of Saul's anger, and all of them came out together as one. When Saul mobilized them at Bezek, he found that there were 300,000 men from Israel and 30,000 men from Judah. So Saul sent the messengers back to Jabesh-Gilead to say, "We will rescue you by noontime tomorrow." There was great joy throughout the town when that message arrived. The men of Jabesh then told their enemies, "Tomorrow we will come out to you, and you can do to us whatever you wish. But before dawn the next morning, Saul arrived, having divided his army into three detachments. He launched a surprise attack against the Ammonites and slaughtered them the whole morning. The remnant of their army was so badly scattered that no two of them were left together. Then the people exclaimed to Samuel, "Now where are those men who said, 'Why should Saul rule over us?' Bring them here and we will kill them." But Saul replied, "No one will be executed today, for today is the Lord has rescued Israel." Then Samuel said to the people, "Come, let us all go to Gilgal to renew the kingdom." So they all went to Gilgal in a solemn ceremony before the Lord. They made Saul king. They offered peace offerings to the Lord, and Saul and all the Israelites were filled with joy.
Samuel's farewell address. Then Samuel addressed all Israel. "I have done as you asked and given you a king. Your king is now your leader. I stand here before you, an old, gray-haired man, and my sons serve you. I have served as your leader from the time I was a boy to this very day. Now testify against me in the presence of the Lord and before his anointed one. Whose ox or donkey have I stolen? Have I ever cheated any of you? Have I ever oppressed you? Have I ever taken a bribe and perverted justice? Tell me, and I will make right whatever I've done wrong." "No," they replied, "you've never cheated or oppressed us. You've never taken a single bribe. The Lord and his anointed are my witness today," Samuel declared, "that my hands are clean." "Yes, he is a witness," they replied. "It was the Lord who appointed Moses and Aaron," Samuel continued. "He brought your ancestors out of the land of Egypt. Now stand here quietly before the Lord as I remind you of all the great things the Lord has done for you and your ancestors. When the Israelites were in Egypt and cried out to the Lord, he sent Moses and Aaron to rescue them from Egypt and to bring them into his land. But the people soon forgot about the Lord their God, so he handed them over to Sisera, the commander of Hazor's army, and also to the Philistines and to the king of Moab who fought against them. Then they cried to the Lord again and confessed, 'We have sinned by turning away from the Lord and worshiping the images of Baal and Ashtoreth. But we will worship you and you alone if you rescue us from our enemies.' Then the Lord sent Gideon, Bedan, Jephthah, and Samuel to save you, and you live in safety. But when you were afraid of Nahash, king of Ammon, you came to me and said that you wanted a king to reign over you, even though the Lord your God was already your king. All right, here is the king you've chosen. You asked for him, and the Lord has granted your request. Now, if you fear and worship the Lord and listen to his voice, and if you do not rebel against the Lord's commands, then both you and your king will show that you recognize the Lord as your God. But if you rebel against the Lord's commands and refuse to listen to him, then his hand will be as heavy upon you as it was upon your ancestors. Now stand here and see the great thing the Lord is about to do. You know that it does not rain at this time of year during the wheat harvest. I will ask the Lord to send thunder and rain today, Then you'll realize how wicked you've been in asking the Lord for a king. So Samuel called to the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day. And all the people were terrified of the Lord and of Samuel. Pray to the Lord your God for us, or we'll die, they all said to Samuel. For now we have added to our sins by asking for a king. Don't be afraid, Samuel reassured them. You have certainly done wrong. But make sure now that you worship the Lord with all your heart, and don't turn your back on him. Don't go back to worshiping worthless idols that cannot help or rescue you. They are totally useless. The Lord will not abandon his people, because that would dishonor his great name. For it has pleased the Lord to make you his very own people. As for me, I will certainly not sin against the Lord by ending my prayers for you. I will continue to teach you what is good and right. But be sure to fear the Lord and faithfully serve him. Think of all the wonderful things he has done for you. But if you continue to sin, you and your king will be swept away.
All right. Move over to Mark 6, 1 through 32.
Here we go.
Mark chapter 6. Jesus rejected at Nazareth. Jesus left that part of the country and returned to his disciples in Nazareth, returned with his disciples to Nazareth, his hometown. The next Sabbath, he began teaching in a synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. They asked, where did he get all this wisdom and power to perform such miracles? Then they scoffed, he's just a carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon. And his sisters live right here among us. They were deeply offended and refused to believe in him. Then Jesus told them, a prophet is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family. And because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles among them except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their unbelief.
Jesus sent out the 12 disciples. Then Jesus went from village to village teaching the people, and he called his 12 disciples together and began sending them out two by two, giving them authority to cast out evil spirits. He told them to take nothing for their journey except a walking stick. No food, no traveler's bag, no money. He allowed them to wear sandals, but not take a change of clothes. Wherever you go, he said, stay in the same house until you leave town. But if any place refuses to welcome you or listen to you, shake its dust from your feet as you leave to show that you have abandoned those people to their fate. So the people went out, telling everyone they met to repent of their sins and turn to God. And they cast out many demons and healed many sick people, anointing them with olive oil.
The death of John the Baptist. Herod Antipas, the king, soon heard about Jesus because everyone was talking about him. Some were saying, this must be John the Baptist raised from the dead. That's why he can do such miracles. Others said, he's the prophet Elijah. Still others said, he's a prophet like the other great prophets of the past. When Herod heard about Jesus, he said, John, the man I beheaded, has come back from the dead. For Herod had sent soldiers to arrest and imprison John as a favor to Herodias. She had been his brother Philip's wife, but Herod had married her. John had been telling Herod, it's against God's law for you to marry your brother's wife. So Herodias bore a grudge against John and wanted to kill him. But without Herod's approval, she was powerless. For Herod respected John, and knowing that he was a good and holy man, he protected him. Herod was greatly disturbed whenever he talked with John, but even so, he liked to listen to him. Herodias' chance finally came on Herod's birthday. She gave a party for his high government officials, army officers, and the leading citizens of Galilee. Then his daughter, also named Herodias, came in and performed a dance that greatly pleased Herod and his guests. Ask me for anything you like, the king said to the girl, and I will give it to you. He even vowed, I will give you whatever you ask, even up to half my kingdom. She went out and asked her mother, what should I ask for? Her mother told her, ask for the head of John the Baptist. So the girl hurried back into the king and told him, I want the head of John the Baptist right now on a tray. Then the king deeply regretted what he had said, but because of the vows he had made in front of his guests, he couldn't refuse her. So he immediately sent an executioner to the prison to cut off John's head and bring it to him. The soldier beheaded John in prison, brought his head on a tray, and gave it to the girl, who took it to her mother. When John's disciples heard what had happened, they came to get his body and buried it in a tomb.
Jesus feeds the 5,000. The apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and told him all they had done and taught. Then Jesus said, let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while. He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. So they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone.
And that, is our reading today.
Yeah. I think this is a weird scene. Ready? It's a weird scene. So, Saul meets Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's like, I'm looking for these donkeys. Samuel's like, shut up about the donkeys, stupid. Mm-hmm. You're going to be the king.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, come up to the roof. Or whatever he said to him. Right. At daybreak the next morning, Samuel, get up, Simon, you're on your way. When they reached the edge of town, Samuel told Saul to send his servant on ahead. And as the servant was gone, Samuel said, "Stay here, for I've received a special message for you from God." That's what he says. "Stay here, I've received a special message from you from God." Next sentence. Then Samuel took a flask of olive oil and poured it over Saul's head, and he kissed Saul and said, "I'm doing this because the Lord has appointed you to be the ruler over Israel, his special possession." So he's like, "Hey, I got a message from God for you." Dump. Like, I'd be like, "What are you? Why?
What do we do that
why'd
for?
Why'd you do that to me?" Just very strange. And Saul's kind of an idiot. So
yeah, bless him.
I bet he didn't
is.
Get it. No, not bless him.
I know. He started out okay.
He did start out okay.
It's sad. Saul was a sad story to me.
Yep.
I feel like you kind of, I was in a Bible study one time where they were like, "Why don't we just not turn the page?" You know what I mean? Because you're reading and you're like, okay, good, doing good things. Then you turn the page and it's like, and there he goes.
Yep, there goes Saul.
Okay.
Well, yeah, anyway, so we read all that. I just think that's very silly. Like, "Hey, I have a special message for you." Dump.
Yep.
Oh.
Thanks.
I think if I gave someone that special message, they wouldn't like it.
No, probably not.
Unless
you prefaced it with.
I'll try at church. No, there's no prefacing. No, I have a special message for you.
You're right. I don't know if you should try that at church.
I'll be like, "Who should I get with it? There's so many good options." I'll be like, "Hey, Ken Mueller, come here. I got a special message for me from the Lord." He'd be like, "Oh, cool. What's up, Eric? What do you want to dump?" Except it'll be vegetable oil. It'll be a whole big, like, gallon of it.
Kim Mueller, just maybe you should avoid Eric for the next couple of weeks. I don't know what else to tell you.
All right. Well, we read all that with two questions in mind, my friend Allison, on day 102. How does this help me love God more? How does this help me love others more? So, Allison, the question I have for you is, how does this help you love
others
more? That's what I was gonna say.
Oh, I was like, is he gonna get to the
I didn't know which one.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know why. You were trying to help me and I'm like, he's so stupid, why won't he hurry up and say it?
It can be both.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm gonna go with others.
Okay.
And I think I don't know if this is gonna make a lot of sense. Maybe it will. But when Jesus told them to shake the dust off their feet, to leave because you've abandoned those people to their fate, I know that's a weird thing to choose when I'm talking about how to love others. But I also feel like that is a way to love others in that we shouldn't become obsessed or waste time in situations where we're not getting anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
I remember I believe it was my sister-in-law, maybe, on a mission trip one time, talking about how they were building houses and helping a community, and I can't remember what country it was in. And one of the owners of the homes was out there telling, you know, "I'll believe in Jesus if you paint my house.
Mm-hmm.
I'll believe in Jesus if you build me this. I believe it." And they were like, "Well, so we just kept working for them." And I was like, "Oh, well, not necessary." Because at some point you do have to shake the dust off your feet and go, you know what? There's other people I can be talking to,
mm-hmm.
who will potentially listen to me. You're not, so I'm gonna shake the dust off of it and go. And I think that's not. I mean, I know that's a weird thing to say in terms of how does this help us love it, but it is. It's how are we loving people well? We're not wasting our time if somebody's like, go well, away.
That person's rejected your love.
Right.
It's now you're loving the person that you wouldn't have time for if you invested in the person that is very clearly not involved.
Yeah.
I think this is an underrated message of the church. Mm-hmm. What you're saying right now. I was just reading this to my students in Titus chapter 3. If people are causing divisions among you, give them a first and second warning. Mm-hmm. After that, have nothing more to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
For people like them have turned away from the truth and their own sins condemn them. Mm-hmm. There comes a time. Listen, God will never stop chasing. And mm-hmm. I think that we should never give up on people. We should pray for people. We should hope for people. But there comes a time where people are not interested in the message of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep pushing away, like if you keep like pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, you're going to shove that person so far away from any interest in the gospel.
Yeah.
Right? I think that there's a lot of, like, goodness in saying, okay, that I'm not the one.
And it may not be that it never happens. It just it's not you.
I have a very good friend who was saved recently, and I had shared the gospel with him several times. And I went to share the gospel with him again, and he was like, "Well, I already believe." I was like, "What? What?
When did this happen?"
Yeah, exactly.
Where was
He's
I?
Like, "Well, we haven't really talked about it in a while." And part of that was, I stopped. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, every time I talk to this dude, I'm sharing the gospel with him, which is
a brick wall,
great. Yeah. But like, it comes to a point where you just have to accept we plant seeds, we water seeds, but mm-hmm. only God gives the growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that smashing down walls and trying to like kick open doors to make people hear the gospel, if they don't want to hear it, they don't want to hear it. If they choose sin over God, that is an option. Mm-hmm. It is an option to choose sin over God. Mm-hmm. And we don't want that for anyone. We don't accept that that's the end. We hope and hope and hope against all hope. But the truth is, there comes a time where I can spend all my time trying to reach this one person who has made their decision. And all of the people I don't go out right. to suffer because
that's
of it.
Where you're not loving others.
And that is an yeah. underrated message of
I
the
agree.
Church.
Yep.
We never give up. We've always prayed for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there comes a time where the effort is just not there. Mm-hmm. You shake the dust from your sandals. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think a good way to say that, Allison, might be to invest in the people who are interested in hearing the gospel. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that's, mm-hmm. that's, we only have so many hours in the day.
Right. Right.
You know, so. Yeah, I'm really passionate about that. That's something that's really kind of like coming around now, walking that fine line of not giving up on people, but also not sinking all of your effort into reaching people who mm-hmm. have outright rejected mm-hmm. the gospel and aren't right. interested.
Yeah.
They're going to have to come on their own time. The mm-hmm. seed's planted.
Yeah.
Only God gives the growth. Right.
Right. Right.
So we move on. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
So how does this help us love God more?
Well, one, we know we can go around dumping oil on people.
Yes.
I think that is a very obvious
great lesson that we took away from that.
Two, if you don't want to do something that God wants you to do, go hide among the baggage. Like, duh. Who cares? I'm picturing him being way too tall to hide among the baggage,
so
too.
Tall.
So he's like sitting there with his knees like up in his chest. He's like the
bags
are, there.
Are like here.
Yeah.
Like on.
Bags only come up to like his nose.
If I can't see over. You, maybe you can't see me.
Long yeah. live the king! Came out from the baggage. Oh my. I think what Samuel did is pretty great, you know. Pronouncing God, like the acts of God, you know, and then not being afraid to say, hey, God's not thrilled about this decision you've made, but also not being afraid to say, but he's going to give you grace. Mm-hmm. This doesn't change the fact that God wants you. This mm-hmm. doesn't change the fact that there's a covenant to be had.
Yeah.
You know, and we live under a covenant today, totally different covenant, but we live under a covenant today, the covenant of grace, the law of Christ, right? Mm-hmm. And like we live under that today. And it is okay for us to say, hey, I think you might be forgetting what God's done for you, mm-hmm. right? That's a great way to love God mm-hmm. is to establish within yourself that you're going to go and remind people of the goodness of God
yeah.
and challenge them to come back to or to remain in a strong fellowship with God. Mm-hmm. I think that that is a great way to love God because that's what he desires.
Yeah.
You are helping him achieve what he desires most, and that is strong fellowship with human beings. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of cool stuff in there
yeah.
for that. I also think just personally, you can't share what God has done if you won't hide those truths in your heart, right? Like that's yeah. just not gonna work. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
I would love God more or better.
More better. Yep.
M.O. Beta. Yeah. And hide among the baggage.
Hide among the bag. Why can't I talk?
Hide about a bag.
My gosh.
And if you're ever trying to recruit people, here's the thing. This is where a lot of people go wrong. I have studied volunteerism like crazy as part of my PhD. Mm-hmm. And so like I've studied volunteerism. How does it work? All this stuff. Motivation. Mm-hmm. People don't volunteer for things unless they feel motivated. They don't feel motivated unless they think there's some value. So if you need to, this is free advice. This is like, here, listen. That's my Bible closing.
Okay.
Here's some free advice. If you want people to volunteer, say for something you're leading up at school or at church or whatever, cut one of your oxen in half. Mm. And then get somebody to walk around with it and say, I'm going to do this to all of your oxen if you don't volunteer. And it'll work.
Very effective.
It'll work.
It would work with me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not out here trying to get my oxen cut in half. Unless no. I'm trying to get people to volunteer. Then I'll cut my
At
oxen
At which point
in half.
You would have to because
yeah.
you that's the only way
There's
you can
really
mess
no other
each
way.
Other. I'm telling you, if somebody walked up to me with like a part of an oxen and was like, hey, guess what's going to happen to your oxen?
I would need to see two parts.
Not me.
No, you're much more spiritual than I. But
not me. I would need to see. I could be like, it could be nothing.
It's just a picture of an oxen ripped in half.
That's it.
Oh, I'd be man. Scared. Not my oxen.
Not my oxen.
That was my third favorite picture of an oxen.
Allison, you don't even have an oxen. But if I ever did.
But if I did.
And then you killed it. This would be enough for me to volunteer.
Okay.
Now, maybe not to go to war, because that's what they were having to volunteer.
Okay, so you really don't care about your oxen.
Not my hypothetical ones, no. Okay. I mean, if I had...
Yeah.
I mean, I've never had an oxen before. I don't know. What are they like? Are they nice?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter, does it?
I just love that I said I've never had an oxen before.
An oxen.
An ox.
I never had an oxen.
An ox.
I never had a single oxen. Because day 100 in Tahoe.
I'm sorry. We don't know.
Hey, there's a challenge.
There's a challenge. I hope you guys are marking away on your little calendar that I posted for you guys. Every day, don't miss. See if you can do it. See if you can get through 30 days
you
without
can
missing.
Do it.
And then when you do, when you get to the end of 30 days, you really have established pretty much the habit is there. I mean, there's a lot of psychology behind that, but I think it's 21 days or something like that.
Here's what I think. We can end with this. It's fine because it's getting kind of long. If you don't do the 30-day challenge, I'm going to cut your oxen in half. I will come to your house. I will find where in Michigan you live. And I will show up to your house in Michigan. And I will cut your oxen in half. I promise I'll do it. I will cut every oxen you have in half if you don't do the 30-day challenge. There. We'll get some people to volunteer for the challenge now. Woo!
Okay.
I mean, not woohoo. A tahoo!